This is the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio. You're very welcome back to the third hour of the programme. And we are going to go back to Ards Forest Park and rejoin Greg Hughes and the team. Greg, good morning.
Thank you very much, Donald. Very exciting scenes here. Actually, not really. It feels like I should be doing some exciting report. We're having a beautiful walk. How's work?
Work is grand. I'm having a beautiful sit down talking.
Really? Yeah, I have a beautiful casual walk and wonderful weather. We're just coming down towards the shore now. And we're all raising money for Donegal Cancer Care West through the Donegal Communio. They're hoping to raise $100,000. We'd love to get up around about four, which would be great, wouldn't it? Right, okay. Well, it would be great. Now, you can donate by going to idonate.ie/Greg Hughes or give us a ring at the radio station, 0749125000. And we'll process it there, and it's all for, as I say, this fantastic charity. But why do people do this stuff? Connor, good morning to you.
Good morning. Great to hear from you.
How are you getting on?
Oh, superb.
Where are you from, Connor?
Living in Dublin from Limerick. Dad was originally Letterkenny, so...
Oh, so there is a Donegal connection.
There is a connection, right. Always.
How did you get involved in this walk?
We'd done the Spanish Camino, and obviously knowing Donegal as well as I do, I think Facebook maybe it came up on, and obviously a worthy cause, and we met Peggy last night, and it was great to do this and obviously donate for such a fabulous cause.
Are you only doing tonight, today, or are you doing the whole thing?
4 days. No, 4 days, yeah. I'd love to do Sleeve Lee. I've never actually been there before, but unfortunately, commitments with Mom and things like that, quite elderly, but we're hopefully at 4:30 in the morning going to do Mount Errigal, so, and Croote Island then on Wednesday. So, looking forward to it all.
What is the draw of Camino Walks? Because you said you did it out in Spain, right? And you wanted to do something here. Is it the exercise? Is it the community? Or what's the attraction?
Everything, yeah. Exercise, community, togetherness, to be honest. Worthy cause, especially. That was certainly close to heart, you know, as you get older. And obviously, relations, you lose. Gosh, fabulous, fabulous cause. Like, so, I think it's sense of community and exercise and... I certainly could do with the exercise, so I
needed to. You seem to be doing all right for me. I'm panting here, and you're all right.
Oh, gee, Chris, I tell you, keeping it well hidden, says you.
Well, let's dig a little bit deeper into this. What did you do last night?
We went to the fabulous South African restaurant, Brie. Yeah. Magnificent.
Just water and minerals. Yeah?
Exactly, yes. Yeah, we turned the water into wine and all that.
I'm starting to get down to the bottom, perhaps, of you.
The monkfish, the food was fabulous, though. The setting, Noreen, quite a few of our crowd were there last night as well, and we went to Rose's Bar, and we were in McNulty's as well. And Peggy kept us up to about 1 in the morning then yapping.
Now, come here, what happens in Chrysler stays in Chrysler. Do you not know the rules?
Sorry about that, yeah.
Terry, are you Connor's walking buddy?
Yeah, we met a couple of years ago on the real Camino, I suppose, the Spanish one, and it was a bunch of randomers, so you signed up with a group, so it was ourselves and four women, and so we got on famously. There was three Irish women and a girl from Saudi Arabia, which was funny, like, being on the pilgrimage, and she was lovely. So we had a guide, Manuel, so we got on great for the... And then myself and Connor kind of remained buddies, and we went back to the Camino a couple of years ago. We did the Bilbao route, which would be the Basque country, all along the coast there. So that was lovely. And then, as Connor says, this thing we saw, I was going to do it last year, but unfortunately, younger brother of mine passed away. He was 30 years.
Sorry to hear that.
Thank you. And again, it was from cancer, unfortunately. And so we made a point of coming back for this one.
Isn't it a terrible disease that it sort of finds a way of making almost everything relevant in a way?
Absolutely, yeah. And unfortunately, every family...
It's all right. Cheers. I'm not going yet. Go on.
Every family has been, as everybody knows, it's touched every family and person, you know, so... Yeah, so whenever you see, and then Peggy's story as well, so it was kind of a, as Connor says, a no-brainer. Good cause thrown in as well. And I've never been to Donegal. I was here at one or two weddings, myself and herself, but we never did any great sort of travelling, so it was nice. It's part of the country I haven't been in, so it was an opportunity to see lovely Donegal, as Daniel would say, or wherever, so yeah.
And good. Just briefly, I won't hold you longer, what do you think of our county?
Beautiful, beautiful, I have to say. Mm. And people now, very impressed with the people. I know if you've done the Donegal heads over the years, but geez, any restaurant now, I know I sound like I'm Ford Falls to Donegal here, but any restaurant...
That's all right, you know.
Yeah, it's all good. Any restaurant or, anywhere we went, or a few jars last night, the locals,
great people. Yeah.
Brilliant stuff, lads. Enjoy it. Okay. Everyone's had a few jars except me. Well, there you go. That's all right. Well, it was more of a slip than a trip, thank you. Was anyone videoing it? That could have made some content. It's all about the content now at High, didn't you know, Donald? Right, okay, so we are well into our walk here at Ards. It's up and down, you know. I don't know what made me think it was going to be flat, but it is up, and thankfully for this link it's down. Because I was struggling a little bit before, but I wanted to work through it for my own personal reasons. But anyway, here we are. So, we are asking you, please, not because we're doing anything huge here, but because we're trying to raise awareness of the brilliant services of Cancer Care West in Letterkenny. Whether you're worried about cancer, you're waiting a diagnosis, we know how awfully anxious a time that can be. Whether or not you've just got a diagnosis, or you're going through treatment, or you're at the other side of treatment, or you're at that cliff edge, you know, where you were down in Galway getting treatment and you come home and everyone goes, yay, you've got the all clear. But it just doesn't really work like that sometimes for us in our own minds. And Cancer Care West Letterkenny is there for that. So if you can, please give us a ring at the radio station, 07491 25000. We can process a payment that way, or go on to the website idonate.ie/Greg Hughes Donald.
Thank you very much indeed, Greg. And I have to hark back to what Joe Coyle said at the start, actually. It was a really good point that sometimes we don't think of, and that's what hits you 4, 5, 6 months down the line, and you repeated that there again, Greg. That is hugely important. That it's really when all the focus comes off, because when you're going through a process, there's a lot of adrenaline, you're focused, you're thinking, you're determined, you're driven, you go through it, you've got the support. Then, as you said, yay, and then 3, 4, 5 months down the line, that's when sometimes it's like a gut-wrenching kick to the stomach.
Yeah, because I know with my sister, she had breast cancer, and I think it was at a more advanced stage than she let on initially, but she had the anxiety and the fear of secondary cancer, which can then be really quite serious. So we did have to go through that, and very sadly, she passed due to cancer, but she did enjoy a great deal of support from this wonderful charity in the hospital and the public services in general. So, yep, a very important part of their work.
Absolutely. Greg, thank you very much indeed. We will be back with you once more, I think, before the show is over.
One last link. People donate.
And the one thing, Greg,
Greg Hughes.
Yeah, I can tell you too, Greg, believe you me, it can be hard in that forest, but when you come out and you see the sea stretched before you, that payoff is worth it, trust me.
We're getting close to it.
You're getting there, but when you break out into the open air, it's worth it, trust me. Brilliant. Greg, thank you very much.
Well, as a seafarer, you see, I look from the sea in towards Forest. So it's going to be interesting, ironically, to get the other perspective looking out.
Okay, no, Greg, we'll be back a bit later on, but for the moment, we'll say goodbye to Greg and the team at Ards Forest Park, and we will, as we say, be back once more before the programme finishes. A few comments before we go. I want to just remind you about that little query we gave you earlier. A caller asks, and we'd like your opinions on this, via paying for lunch at school. The school wants to children to pay with a card or Revolut. They have taken cash up to now, but they want the card. It's a new rule. They say they can't accept cash. The mother doesn't want to give the child a card to go to school with. What do people think out there? We also had a caller raise the issue with cash and card with regards to the GAA. And a caller says, if the GAA won't take cash at games, I just leave the cash on the desk and walk on past. If you've paid, you've paid. Another caller says, people should boycott any GAA match or any event that doesn't accept cash. Regarding mobile phones, and we had a discussion earlier, BBC One have a discussion tonight on how you can do without them for a whole week. It's on Panorama, it's on BBC One. The programme is subtitled, Can We Live Without Our Phones? Do people who go without smartphones for a week talk to each other more, sleep better, or do they miss out on vital conversations with friends? That's Panorama tonight. With regards to teachers refusing children permission to go to the toilet, caller says, I thought for 40 years, never refused a toilet visit. Just say, I'm going to the toilet. All classroom rules were agreed together at the beginning of the year. Should children be allowed to go to the toilet? Caller says, it's illegal not to let them. Another caller says, I can understand why a teacher doesn't want to let the kids run to the toilet every 10 minutes during class. Surely it's a few one-off, but what the harm? If it becomes a habit or a pattern, speak to the parents. I appreciate they may not want the class to be constantly disrupted. That's just some of the perspectives on that particular one. Again, another caller just warning us, and you heard the story with Donna Marie on the news. There's been a oil spill on the roads. We initially got warned about the spill on the road from Convoy to Rafona. The area, as we heard, it has now stretched, and there's oil on some stretches of road, really stretching from Lifford into Rafona Convoy, and then really down toward the Twin Towns, and then even heading down further down toward Donegal Town. So if you're driving in that area, there are signs up, but please do be aware there is an oil spill. Caller says, we had a lovely priest, only recently celebrated 60 years as a parish, but our priest has been moved. Now we've gone back to being part of Clonly Strabane. Surely the bishop should have visited our parish and explained this. The parish raised over €2,000 a week in donations. Where will this money now go? Why should our money be paying for work in other parishes? I know a lot of parishes are realigning boundaries, and they're bringing, within the diocese, they're bringing two parishes together with one priest serving two parishes. That's happening in a lot of places, and I think it's going to happen more and more. Finally, before we go to a break, regarding smartphones, when cell towers started going up everywhere in the UK in the 90s, they weren't allowed to site a tower within a specific distance of a school because of concerns about the effect microwave radiation could have on the development of children's brains. I wonder, were those concerns addressed or simply ignored? So asks a caller. We're joined on the line by David Martin of the Road Safety Authority. You'll have been hearing on the news that today is National Slowdown Day. Gardaí out in force on the roads of Donegal and right across the country. David, good morning.
Good morning to you, Donald.
David, what sort of indications are coming? The Gardaí have been out there on this initiative now since 7 this morning. What sort of results are coming back?
Well, yes, you're right. They've been on running this at 7 o'clock this morning. I was speaking to the Gardaí just a short while ago, and they tell me that the first 2 hours up to 9 a.m. this morning, they conducted nearly 10,000 checks, speeding checks, and had obviously caught quite a few people speeding. So it is high profile. It's something that the Road Safety Authority supports. It's a very important time of the year. They run these a few times every year, on a few days every year. This time of year, it coincides with kids going back to school, and that's something that we're very concerned about. Look, your listeners are probably all experiencing a significant increase in traffic as the country is in the return to school and normal work routines. So what we're doing and what the Gardaí are doing is reminding drivers to slow down and to be aware of, particularly of children on the way to school. And it's also very important that parents speak to the children about road safety, whether they're traveling to school on foot or cycling or traveling by bus or car. And we're also encouraging principals and staff at schools to look at the RSA's back to school guidelines for improving road safety around schools. Those are available on our website, rsa.ie. So busy time of the year. It's going to get darker over the next coming weeks. I know that we haven't had a great summer, but it is coming to an end. More traffic. So just, we want people to slow down and just be aware.
This is a one-off, one-day campaign, but obviously the campaign itself is a permanent 24/7 campaign. In terms of the speeding warnings, more and more cameras going up around the country, more and more GoSafe vans, more and more static cameras in places as well. Are we going to see more and more focus on cameras in terms of their importance in acting as a deterrent?
Yeah, very much so. The government has made a serious commitment to investing in these types of technologies. So we're going to see more of them over the coming months. And also there'll be a reduction in speed limits across the country as well. So there's a number of strings to this particular bow. There's a whole legislation piece, and that we're seeing that in these new speed cameras, etc. The enforcement piece with the Gardaí out in a highly visible way. And then there's also ourselves at the Road Safety Authority educating and raising awareness of the problems on the road. On the roads, it's been a bad year to date. There's been 127 people killed on Irish roads this year, which is one more than last year. And last year, yeah, you probably remember, it was a really bad year on the roads. So we still have a big problem on our hands, and we're working very closely with the government and with the Garda Síochána Síochána to address that.
We know that there's the traditional warnings: speeding, use of mobile phones, distraction, and so on.
Yeah.
In terms of the increases, and sadly this year we've seen an increase in deaths on the roads here in Donegal as well. There have now been more road deaths in Donegal so far in 2024 than during the whole of 2023. Now, obviously, we cannot ascribe any particular causes to any death that, you know, that hasn't gone through the proper process yet, and we wouldn't wish to.
Sure.
But, I mean, obviously, you've got to be looking at what's happening on the roads right across the country and asking why.
We have, and it's, you know, you're absolutely right. It takes a couple of years before the Gardaí conduct their investigations, and there's coroner's reports, and the various processes that get to be gone through before we can determine a particular cause behind an incident or a collision. But we do know, and we are looking at this on the road, we are seeing a deterioration in behaviours on the road over the last couple of years. There's been an increase in speeding. We're also seeing a huge increase in distracted driving. And really, that's people using their mobile phones. And also, it's really worrying, relaxation, perhaps that's not the right word, but there's a greater tolerance of drink driving and drug driving. So, you know, it's something that is of great concern to us. It kind of seems to be a post-COVID thing. So we're seeing it's something that's occurred in the last 2 to 3 years. But overall, a deterioration in driving behaviours, and it's something that inevitably results in increased collisions and injuries and fatalities. So a big concern for us here at the Road Safety Authority.
And it's funny you mentioned the COVID. I was going to ask because there was a marked reduction in the level of traffic that was on the roads over the COVID period. And it did creep back up, and now we're probably even busier on the roads than we were pre-COVID.
We are.
But is it that sort of people's defences went down during COVID because, oh, the roads are going to be quieter, there's not going to be as much traffic out there, it's going to be a lot easier. Defences went down a bit, we got a bit more lax in terms of our awareness, in terms of our vigilance on the road, and we didn't bring it back up to the same extent as the traffic grew.
I think there's something in that, all right. I think also, and again, this is anecdotal, but also talked to experts in this in our research department. There's a sense of abandon. Perhaps people were confined and their activities were constrained for a prolonged period of time. And I think there's been a bit of we're back out. We can do what we want now. And people are just being a more cavalier and less cautious on the road than they perhaps were before. So that is definitely a problem, and we're seeing it's manifesting itself on the road, no question about it. The other thing I wanted to mention is that we have just, in terms of back to school, we have just published a report in the last couple of days looking at child injuries and fatalities over the 5-year period. And it's very distressing reading, as you can imagine, but there were 34 kids aged 15 or younger killed and 592 seriously injured over the 5-year period to 2023. And the thing that jumped out at me and why I really wanted to mention it is that 2/3 of those were either pedestrians or cyclists. So they're young kids on their bikes or walking to or from school. So it's really, really important that people are aware of that, you know, there are very vulnerable road users, and to be, you know, and they are back out on the roads now, they're back in school. So just for your listeners to be aware of that.
And one of the concerns, particularly at this kind of time of year, is always going to be that, you know, if people drive to work on a route that may have school traffic during the school term, we may just have gotten used to driving it without the school traffic for a couple of months in July and August, and now suddenly it's back. And now what's suddenly happening is we're leaving the house at the same time we left the house 2 weeks ago, but now there's 3 times as much traffic on the road. We're maybe running the risk of being a bit late for work. So maybe, again, we're just putting the foot down a bit and trying to hurry things up. And that's affecting our concentration. It's affecting our driving. And maybe we all need to say, OK, instead of leaving at 5:15, I'll leave at 5:05. I'll give it 10 extra minutes. And if I get to work early, hey, we'll just have a cup of coffee.
Well, that's exactly what I did this morning. I was dropping my 2 kids to school and they were giving out to me because they got in too early. But I gave myself a seriously extra bit of time to make sure that, you know, I wasn't rushing. I think there's a couple of things as well for people dropping their kids to school. If you're driving your kids to school, just park carefully to avoid forcing children out onto the road. You see a lot of sort of chaotic parking around schools. That in itself is dangerous. And the other thing that I'm very conscious of, if you're overtaking a kid on a bike or anybody on a bike, you've got to allow at least 1 meter overtaking distance. Give them plenty of space. If that's in a 50-kilometer zone, and if you're in a over 50 kilometers, give it 1.5 meters. Give them plenty and plenty of space, because that's one thing that we're very, very concerned about.
David, finally, in terms of what happens today, we'll get over the course of the day the updates, and we'll hear about more. A motorist on such and such road was caught doing 140 in a 100 kpg zone or kph zone, and a motorist was caught doing 160 at a 120, and so on and so forth. And we'll be really focused on it for 24 hours. The challenge that you face and that the Gardaí face, you know, and all of us face, I suppose, is keeping that level of awareness and that level of thinking about the speed going tomorrow and the next day and the next day and the next day, because a 24-hour go slow day is all very well, but it needs to be a 24/7 go slow year.
It does, and you know, you're right. We can't just have people sort of being aware of 24 hours. People need to adjust the driving patterns. They need to slow down. Speed is, it really is a killer behavior, and it's still a problem for us. People are driving too fast. So it's not just about today. Today is obviously about reminding motorists of the dangers of speeding, and also we want to deter speeding. You know, I talked to the Gardaí earlier. 375 drivers are caught speeding every day, you know, which is a staggering statistic. So it just gives you an idea of the enormity of the problem in many ways. So we want people to slow down. We'll be at it, which it's a key concern for the Road Safety Authority, and we'll be pushing that message out over the coming weeks and months.
David Martin, thank you very much indeed for speaking to us this morning.
Thank you.
Thank you, David. That's David from the Road Safety Authority. And today, as we said, is National Go Slow Day. Now, we're going to be having our Monday Focus feature in just a while, and we'll be speaking to someone who is hoping to become a member of Seanad Éireann. And it's going to be an interesting discussion indeed. Want to say a very good morning to all those who are watching us online. We have Charles and John and Mark and Darren and a number of others as well. And just want to say, just a couple of comments that have come in. Charles says that parents of children should be more aware of what their children are up to at all times. Fair play to parents who are taking this initiative. That's reference to the discussion we had earlier about mobile phones in the primary schools. Best of luck to all those taking part in the Donegal Camino. That's from John. Mark tells us that lotto winners can go to any post office in the north to collect their winnings. That's, a caller said earlier they had won £800 sterling on the UK lotto, and we're being told they're going to have to go to Wales to collect it. Well, we believe, from what Mark said, that you can pick it up in any post office in Northern Ireland. Another caller says, how about Highland talk about the real scourge in Ireland, which is suicide, never mind roads and the RSA looking for more funds. Many more people die from suicide than die on roads. Darren, yes, we do need to have a focus on suicide, but you can't, it's not a zero-sum game. You don't do A or B. It's not focus on suicide or roads. They're both huge issues, and they both need to be focused on. But you don't say, oh, we'll lower the focus on roads and put the emphasis on suicide instead. What you do is keep the focus on roads and increase the focus on suicide. I think that's the way to do it. This is the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio, and if you're watching online on our Facebook pages or on our YouTube channel, Highland Radio Ireland, you will see a very erudite and intelligent looking gentleman who is sitting in front of me here in studio. Hilary Byrne is a founding chairperson of the New York St. Patrick's Day Foundation and is seeking election to the Seanad, representing the global Irish citizen. Hilary, you're very welcome to the show.
Thank you very much for having me today.
It is our pleasure. Here in Donegal, there is a lot of emphasis on the diaspora. We have an awards ceremony every September named in honour of Tip O'Neill, who has family links with Inishowen here in the county. And a lot of focus on the diaspora. And you want to just take that to a new level and represent the diaspora in the hallowed halls of Seanad Éireann.
Yes. Well, Ireland has, believe it or believe it not, it's an astounding number. Per the Department of Foreign Affairs, 1 million Irish-born nationals living abroad, and nobody represents their interest in Ireland. And that's, reflect on that, that's 20% of Ireland's population, and not one single representative in the Oireachtas represent their interest in Ireland. And the hope is that I will run in the National University of Ireland constituency. Over half the graduates live abroad, and I would be, in essence, their representative as well as everybody else's representative, because Ireland needs to engage them. Some of them are highly, highly successful individuals, and by having a point person here in Ireland, it would help them to invest in Ireland and help the Irish economy and give back to their homeland, and that's not currently being done. So the hope is that I will get elected to Seanad Éireann that will help to start to formulate, in essence, a different policy towards Irish emigrants abroad. And you reflect on it, I'm sure, in your own family, you've got relatives who live abroad, and every single family in Ireland has. And like I say, they are not being engaged in a real way. They're not being representative here. And that's such a shame.
You're based in New York. Would you be giving a commitment to come over, if elected, to come over and base yourself in Dublin whenever the Seanad is sitting?
Yes, I probably would base myself in Boyle County, Roscommon, where I'm from.
Yeah.
But yes, I would come to Ireland and live in Ireland, because, again, there is a desperate need. And when I say a desperate need, I spoke last year at the Global Civic Forum in Dublin Castle. You had Irish citizens from all over the globe. And when I spoke about the need for representation, the correct place would be in the Seanad, not in the Dáil. And why? Because the Dáil is the legislative body that governs this country. You don't want people who are not invested and engaged on a day-to-day basis with Ireland having a say in the government of the country. So that's where the Seanad comes in. It's appropriate to have a Seanad constituency for the Irish abroad to elect representatives. And what that will do is increase engagement. And a classic example of that would be the French model. While it's highly involved, but the French citizens of North America elected Roland Lescure, who is the French Minister of Industry. And as people said, he brings that outside, that fresh look to the French economy. But more importantly, because he's elected by the French citizens of North America, it opens up the boardrooms of North America for the French economy. And as I said at the Civic Forum last year in Dublin Castle, Ireland will never have that opportunity, because Ireland doesn't engage its successful individuals in a real way through some kind of representative here in Ireland. When they want to invest in Ireland, they have to go to IDA Ireland or Enterprise Ireland, and that in essence is a faceless entity to them when they live outside the country. So having a point person will help to do follow-up on for them to help their move forward with investing in Ireland.
Certainly when it comes to New York, you're going to be well known within the Irish community there. You're an honorary member of the Fighting Irish Regiment. You're in the Irish Ad Hoc Committee to protect the Good Friday Agreement. You're a board member of the 69th Historical Trust. You're a member of the Roscommon and Leitrim Societies in New York, and I'm sure you meet the Donegal Society quite regularly as well there.
Yep.
They're very, very active over there.
Yes.
Also, as we said, the founding chair of the New York St. Patrick's Day Foundation. It's a very difficult campaign in that you now have to get your message across to graduates of the universities that are literally spread all over the world. I don't know, what resources are you given, a list of email addresses, or do you have to source all that down yourself?
Well, I wish there was an email list. The constituency has 111,000 registered voters. So the way to engage them is, believe it or not, through social media. There's it's a mailing list, so if you were to post to all of those individuals, you would need somewhere in the region of €250,000 to do that, and that's prohibitive for us. So we're revving up a social media campaign, be it on LinkedIn, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and we're hoping that we will be able to reach them. Coming here today is part of that process in helping to raise my profile with the voters in the NUI constituency, because at the end of the day, we need representation. Ireland needs that representation for the future. And if you reflect, Ireland has gained tremendously from their ancestral immigrants to the North America. There would be no Good Friday Agreement without George Mitchell. There would be very few investments from North America, such as Google, Apple, and all of those companies that create over 400,000 jobs in Ireland. And with lack of immigration to the United States, what we're finding is the Irish Americans are not involved. 85% of young Irish Americans are not involved in organized Irish organization. So where is the future of that special relationship that Ireland has enjoyed economically and politically in North America? It's in jeopardy in 10, 15 years. And you'll have a person in the boardroom of North America with an Irish last name in 10, 15 years from now deciding where to invest in Europe. And if they're not connected to Ireland in some real way, they're going to mainland Europe at the expense of employment here in Ireland.
As we say, your expertise, your knowledge and your profile is in North America, New York in particular. There are Irish in Australia, there are Irish in Singapore, there are Irish literally all over the globe.
Malaysia.
For you to be a voice of the Irish abroad as an entire mass of an entire diaspora is going to take you learning an awful lot more than what you know in North America. You're going to have to become conversant with the Irish experience in Asia, in Europe, in South America, in Africa.
Well, I'm already engaged. Like I say, when I spoke at that Global Civic Forum, one of the people that was there was Donald Crotty from Carlo. He heads up the Irish Chamber of Commerce in Malaysia. Another person that was there was Raymond Sexton from Limerick. He heads up Tangible Ireland in Australia. Jackie Gilna from Walkinstown in Dublin heads up We Are Global Irish in Ottawa. So I've been already doing that engagement. I've been talking to them. Troy Gallagher from Donegal here was the former mayor of Islington in London. I spoke with Vincent Kavanagh, the former Lord Mayor of London from Dublin in relation to this. And of course, I've spoken to a lot of people here in Ireland. And last summer, I came to Ireland after speaking at the forum just to see if there was an interest here in Ireland for a representative like myself in Shannon. And I held an average of two meetings for 2.5 weeks. And what I found was, yes, there is an interest. People think the time has come that the Irish living abroad has at least one representative. There is no means of a person abroad getting elected. However, in this constituency, there is.
Yeah.
And I'm hoping to be able to get elected to represent the Irish abroad, but also to bring some fresh perspective. As you said, I'm part of the Irish Ad Hoc Committee to Protect the Good Friday Agreement in Washington, and I've been at the table at some very interesting conversations during Brexit. And bear in mind, I was the only Irish-born that was on that committee, and I came before I left Ireland. I worked in Northern Ireland. I've experienced parts of the Troubles, and also I worked in agriculture here in the west of Ireland.
A caller says, and in fairness, you have, to a large extent, answered this. A caller says, I totally disagree with Hillary. People who turn their back on this country by living and working elsewhere should have no say in where the country is going. Can he convince me why this should be acceptable? The tax rules and running of this country will not affect them, but they will me. So why give those who have left a say in it?
In other words, your caller is talking about representation without taxation. That's why the Shannon is the appropriate place. The Dáil determines social welfare, health, pensions, everything. Most of your Irish who live abroad would not be eligible for that. Therefore, the Shannon is the appropriate place. And also, with that engagement, you get that return of culture. All you have to look at is all the Irish children that come from abroad to perform in feshes here in Ireland. And also look at the past president of the GAA, Larry McCarthy, what he brought to the table for the GAA.
In terms of your actions in the Shannon, if you were elected to represent the university's panel, obviously you would have an obligation to the universities as well. You'd have
yes.
to be taking an interest in education, yeah. third level and so on and so forth. You do believe that you will not be seeking necessarily to influence policy on Irish social welfare issues, but
no.
you believe your presence in the Shannon could help sort of focus government attention on what needs to be happening in Irish communities abroad and what supports need to be given to them. For instance, would you be taking an active role in the ongoing debate about those in America who are afraid to come home because they're undocumented and they'd fear about their chances of getting back in? Is there a role to be played in debates like that, do you believe?
Yes, there is. Having said that, the United States is pretty much closed to immigration at the moment. And those who are undocumented have a genuine fear that if they do come home, and I've met many of them where they can't come home for their parents' funeral, and that's absolutely terrible. But the fear is that if they did, they would not be able to get back. And some of them have been there 20 years or more, and that's so unfair. But in relation to the NUI, I've been an educator for over 30 years in the United States. So, and one of the things that I would advocate is last year, Ireland, 64,000 Irish people left Ireland. The year before, it was 58,000. And there needs to be a better job done in having reciprocal agreements, particularly in the NUI, with other countries, because quite a lot of them, when they go abroad, they have to be retrained. Their degrees are not reflective of the global economy. And that needs to be improved engagement, be it in Australia or Canada. One young lady had a degree in law. She had to spend a further 2 years before she'd become a solicitor or QC in Vancouver. So, again, there's a lot of improvement that can be done.
As we said, a lot of people will be aware of the 69th, the Fighting Irish, and one of the things you've written over your time is you've written a history and a celebration of that particular regiment.
Yes. The 69th Regiment was founded right after the famine by Michael Corcoran from Sligo and Thomas Francis Moore from Waterford, who designed the Irish tricolour. It's been a home for the regiment. It's been a home for Irish people who went to the United States, particularly after the famine. It's one of the most decorated regiment in the entire United States. An interesting fact is two brothers from Nina. One won the Congressional Medal of Honor, which is the highest military award that you can receive in the United States, and his brother won the Victoria Cross. But it has an astounding history. It's led the New York City St. Patrick's Day Parade for 173 years, and the parade itself is 263 years.
Hillary, we expect the general election to take place in November. That means, presumably, we're looking at a Seanad election being called January, February, but the Seanad can't sit until there's a new government in place and the Taoiseach can put forward his or her nominees. So we're potentially looking at maybe March, April, or slightly after that before a new Seanad sits. We'll be certainly looking out to see how you do in those elections, but you've certainly got a few busy months ahead.
Yes, absolutely. And today I have two radio interviews. I'll be in Limerick. I'm going to be in Dublin. I was in Wexford. I spoke at Dublin City Hall last week, and I'm going to be speaking at the University Club in Dublin on the 17th on the history of the New York City St. Patrick's Day Parade and the 69th. So I have a busy few weeks ahead of me.
Hilary Byrne, all the best with it, and we'll talk to you again, I'm sure. Thank you very much indeed.
Thank you very much.
Two very quick comments before we go to our next guest. A caller says there is no respect or tolerance for fellow drivers. If they want to overtake you, they leave it until they're coming to a corner or a blind spot on the road. And another caller says there is a car off the road outside Castlefin on the Castledurg Road. It's on a corner, so please do drive with care. Now, did you know that more than 9 out of 10 retailers say they were victims of crime over the course of the past year? That's according to a study that was conducted by RG Data. The Director General of RG Data is Tara Buckley, and she joins us on Zoom. Tara, good morning.
Morning.
How serious a problem is this, and what sort of crimes are we talking about? Are we talking shoplifting? Are we talking something more serious with threats?
Unfortunately, it's extremely serious at this stage. I mean, the vast majority of the customers who come into the shops that I represent, which are convenience and grocery stores all over the country, are perfectly nice, come in and want to just buy their stuff and get on with it. But there's a small group of people who are making life extremely miserable for the shop, the retailers and their staff and the other customers. Over 97% of our members are seeing shoplifting on a regular basis. And then we have aggravated assaults and burglaries. So what's very worrying is the increase in violence and aggression. So we're seeing attacks with knives, screwdrivers, hammers, guns, you name it. They've brought in as a weapon into a shop somewhere around the country. And it's extremely worrying for the owners and for the staff and for the other customers.
In terms of the crime prevention service offered by Gardaí, we know we have a very active crime prevention office here in Donegal that goes out regularly to the community, works with business, works with neighbourhoods and so on. I'm sure it's the same all over the country. Could more be done in terms of links between Gardaí and businesses?
Yes, certainly this survey shows that there is a bit of disappointment in terms of the Garda response times. So we would certainly like to see, you know, more done to ensure that there's a very quick response. There is a bit of a worry amongst retailers that shoplifting is seen as a sort of minor problem. And, you know, it doesn't need to be addressed. But they feel very strongly that if you don't nip this sort of activity in the bud, it the people who are engaged in it move on to more serious crime. So we believe it's quite important that shoplifting is taken very seriously and that there is a very serious Garda reaction and response to it.
The other element of that is business alert schemes, and I know similar schemes run elsewhere, where businesses will, if they notice anything suspicious or if they see anyone they recognise or if they experience anything in their shop, they'll immediately put a text out that's spread out among other businesses just to warn people that they too could be vulnerable. Is there scope for such services and such initiatives to be expanded?
Well, absolutely. I mean, we do have, after we did our survey last year, the Gardaí introduced Operation Thorga, which is looking at serial shoplifters and sort of organised criminals who take off in down the motorway and rob in several places. So there is a way of warning towns that these people are on their way. So that's very important. But I suppose the frustration is that even if you catch the people and get CCTV footage, the criminal justice system is very cumbersome, and a lot of retailers would feel that judges are too lenient. We'd like to see a lot more custodial sentences for serial shoplifters, because we believe that if they feel there's no consequences, they will continue to rob at will.
In terms of the government, is there anything more can be done on a political level with regards to legislation, or is it a case of all the correct legislation is there? What's necessary is more Garda resources and more Garda emphasis on implementing that legislation and bringing it to its fullest point possible.
But we do think there are some opportunities for the legislators to look at this. There was a private member's bill about a specific crime of violence against a retail worker. That probably won't go through now because there won't be enough time before the general election. So potentially we'll be asking the parties to put this into their political manifestos, that there would be a specific crime of violence against retail workers. We also think that there should be mandatory banning orders for somebody who's found guilty of robbing a shop. There should be a mandatory banning order to stop them entering that shop again for a specific period of time. Because we have instances of members where their shop is robbed, they go to court, the person is prosecuted, and they're back robbing the shop that afternoon. So that would be very helpful. And the third thing we'd like the legislators to look at is a compensation scheme for retailers who are victims of crime. Because a lot of the time these crimes cost the retailer an awful lot of money. For example, we had a member where the wheelie bins were all set on fire by a gang of teenagers. It cost €65,000. In damages. We've other instances where the shop is damaged, where, you know, could be damaged to the windows or damaged to the security shutters or whatever. And that costs an awful lot of money to fix. So we think there should be compensation and a way of collecting that compensation.
Tara Buckley, thank you very much indeed for speaking to us. Tara Buckley there, the Director General of RG Data. Tara, thank you very much indeed. That's Tara. Now we are going to finish by going back to Ards Forest Park and welcome back onto the programme Greg Hughes and the team there. Greg is on the way and we'll just give Greg some audio. And here we go.
Yes, Donald. I'm
oh,
here.
I think
can
I see Shannon.
Okay.
Shannon, good morning. How are you?
Yes, can you hear me all right, Donald?
Yes, indeed. Yeah, okay. Fine. Thank you.
Yeah, good stuff. We are at Ards Friar here now. We've, I think we're about 50 of the way, 50% of the way through, I hope. And we are taking part in day two of the Donegal Camino Walk. It is a fantastic event, which is obviously got huge participation, but it's to raise money for Donegal Cancer Care West. And you know we've talked extensively about that. And it's a key fundraising drive. It's gone from strength to strength, starting in and around raising 5,000 or 6,000 euro up until an ambitious but a target that will be achieved of 100,000 euro this year. Noreen Darcy joins me. Noreen, how exciting this is for us to be here. It's, you know, you're so well used to it now, but it's great for us to see everything that goes on, and what an amazing buzz for an amazing cause.
It's emotional. It's not necessarily overwhelming, but and it's really riveting. 116 people walking through Ards Forest Park this morning and on further now along by the sand dunes. And we've grown by 25 on average per day. Well, actually 30 today from 75 walkers last year. So we've 116 out, and it's fantastic. And it's all contributing to the total focus, which is to raise 100 grand for cancer care West. And we have a fabulous team of guides, committee, and it's just a wonderful project to be involved in. Not alone is it showcasing beautiful scenery, fantastic walks in Donegal, but the whole focus in terms of supporting cancer patients and their families is huge, and that's the dual purpose of what we have in the Donegal Camino.
And today, talking to people who themselves are cancer survivors, people who lost loved ones very young, those who had loved ones or themselves had went through, you know, cancer and are out the other side. Everyone has a story, and I think that talks to how this disease impacts our lives.
Absolutely. Cancer is unfortunately everywhere. And I'm from Galway myself, with huge Donegal connections. Lost a cousin to cancer at the end of March. But my mum is in hospital in Galway, and I've met even an annual walker who's currently going through some treatment in Galway every week for the last 4 or 5 weeks. And each day it prompted me to go to level 5 of UCHG up and down the stairs if I couldn't get a walk in, because that's what it's for. The journey from Donegal to Galway, not alone to be undergoing cancer treatment, is arduous enough. And this is what it's for. It's to help support and give comfort as well as quality treatment. And that's what this money will go to from Cancer Care West.
If anyone wants to taste the Camino vibe for the rest of the week, is it too late?
Almost. We've sold out Errigal tomorrow. There's spaces remaining on the Bluestack Way on Friday, but they're limited. So if you want to get in, get onto DonegalCamino.ie very quickly after this interview. But the most important thing is to keep pressing the I Donate button and help us get that get past that 100,000 target.
Super. Thank you very much indeed.
Thank you.
It's our pleasure, Noreen. Now, we are also through our own I Donate as well, and it is not to take anything away from what the fantastic people here are doing. It's another layer. We're over 4,000 euro, which is incredibly exciting, and thank you so much to all of your generosity. You don't have long to donate, so please, if you have anything you can donate, go to idonate.ie/Greg Hughes. As I say, unbelievably, we're over 4,000, and wouldn't it be amazing to reach 5,000? And you've heard all the stories today of why it's so important. This charity is so important. Now, Fionnuala Rabbit is with us here, so I don't mind if we crash 12 just a little bit, because she owns the station. Someone described it as the rabbit dynasty.
Yeah,
and I'm like taking it. Money from the government. Wow. Wouldn't that be nice?
Would be very nice. But when I think dynasty, I think that TV program in the 80s, so it makes me want to get like shoulder pads and that kind of thing and really get into it.
No, she's no Sue Ellen, or is that Dallas? Anyway, come here. You feel like punching someone who said that was an easy walk.
You told me it was flat, and I do.
No, I was told it was flat.
I know, in fairness now. I know, it was an easy walk in the sense that it's beautiful here, but there was definitely a few more hills than I had planned on in my, very little getting ready for this. My practicing was not quite what it needs to be, so I'm hoping the rest of it is all downhill and going across by the
beach.
Well,
I'll take flat.
Yeah, a flat I go all the way. But it was a bit more uphill than I thought, but beautiful. Oh my God, the park is so beautiful, and even this hour of the morning, I definitely think to people, this is the nicest county in Ireland. You need to get out and see it more. Every time I go anywhere, I'm always amazed at how beautiful it is. It just take the eye out of your head, as they say down in Galway. Every time you turn a corner, it's fabulous here.
And you don't have to, you don't do that caveat anymore, you know, whereby you feel you have to have one foot in Galway. You're all out Donegal now.
Oh God, I'm gone very. I know. Sure, I was at the match, Donegal Galway, with the two colours flying. All my nieces and nephews were giving out to me that I had my yellow and green on as well. But no, definitely, this is the most beautiful county in Ireland, and people should get out and about and see it. And when you get nice weather like this, that we've been so lucky today, it's turned beautiful. If you get an opportunity to join, you'll meet just an amazing group of people that are out there from Donegal. They're from Donegal people who live away and are back to do this walk, as well as visitors to the county. So you'll just meet a lovely group of people as you're walking around, and you don't even feel the time going. So I definitely recommend people should come and try it.
Thank you, Fionnuala. So please, if you can get us over 5,000 euro, I'm sorry to beg, but we really would love to get over the five. Go to idonate.ie/Greg Hughes, or give us a ring at the radio station.